This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, an upgrade for growers who don't settle for average. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Stocks are trading again this morning, and they're under heavy pressure as the market tries to digest new developments in the China trade conflict. Bean prices also responding with increased selling pressure. And that's got the grain in the livestock markets trading lower as well. It is one of those days.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for joining us again this morning on AgriTalk. Wow, we are in the middle of a broad-based sell-off in the commodities and equities this morning. The Dow Jones Industrial Average off 607.09 points right now. That's a 2.43% decline in value. This is quite a sell-off for this time of the morning. It feels like if it continues to build on itself, that this could be one of those historic days in the equity trade, no question about it. And it has spilled over to the commodity markets. Corn is trying to make some kind of a comeback in here right now. We'll find out why here in just a little bit. Traders are trying to figure out what is happening with the arrest of Chinese businesswoman Sabrina Meng from Huawei Technologies. Huawei is a telecommunications company in China. This is a story that's got the potential to derail trade negotiations with China. We're going to talk about this and update other happenings farm news with Farm Journal News Director John Harith in the next segment. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about infrastructure needs and funding. Most importantly, funding with Mike Steenhook from the Soy Transportation Coalition. Mike is an absolute champion in tackling some very specific problems in the infrastructure that serves agriculture, and we need to get an update on what they are working on right now. And at the end of the show, this is interesting, we're going to be talking with Jonathan Clausen. Jonathan is an assistant professor of mechanical engineering at Iowa State University, and he is leading a team that is developing an, I don't know how else to describe it other than as it is an on-the-fly soil sensor, okay, that will tell us what the soil is losing and where those nutrients are going. I think it's all very interesting, and looking forward to the conversation with Jonathan. Right now, let's turn it over to Tyne Morgan, get an update on the news. What is going on, Tyne?
Well, Chip, you wouldn't know it from the markets, but apparently Chinese officials issuing a brief but positive statement about the recent talks between the U.S. and China, saying there's a clear timetable and roadmap. Now, China's Ministry of Commerce commenting, saying, quote, China will start from agricultural products, auto and energy to immediately implement specific items that China and the U.S. have agreed upon, end quote. However, the details of exactly what was agreed upon, you know, those are still unclear. The commerce official did say China is fully confident and can reach a deal with the U.S. within 90 days. But as I said, the market's not reacting to that, right? Because throwing a wrench in things, as you mentioned, an arrest of a Chinese executive, groups like Reuters and Bloomberg reporting, that's why the Dow was plunging this morning. The arrest could feed fears of more tensions between the U.S. and China, which then could bleed over into all of those trade talks. Now, the female Chinese executive was arrested in Canada last night at the request of U.S. officials. There aren't many details over her arrest, but some reports say it's over issues dating back to 2016 when her company allegedly shipped U.S. origin products to Iran and other countries, which is in violation of U.S. export and sanction law. So we'll continue to follow this, but that's really what's impacting the markets this morning. And also, Chip, if you're looking to buy some farm equipment before the calendar flips to 2018, which I am not because my husband would not approve of that anyway. Well, if you are in the market of some new or new to you equipment, changes to the new tax law could impact you. According to Farm Journal's tax expert, Paul Niefer, there's always a push to buy in equipment at year end for tax purposes. But this year, changes in the new tax code could mean those tax incentives apply to both new and used equipment.
From a tax standpoint, better benefit, 100% bonus. New and used, old law was 50% only on new. So there's definitely a benefit from a tax standpoint doing it at the end of the year.
And happening right now, Chip, a year-end unreserved online dealer auction. It's actually machinerypeat.com happening right now in conjunction with Big Iron. The auction is an unreserved, absolute auction, so the highest bidder wins. Yep. Machinery Pete tells us this auction has no buyer fees, which is interesting, but it runs now through December 27th. Just go to machinerypeat.com/auction.
And Tyne, let's stress on that again. No reserve on that equipment that's being offered at machinerypeat.com.
Yeah, I mean,
will go to the highest bidder.
It will go to the highest bidder. And so first of its kind, never happened before. But Machinery Pete sent me a note this morning wanting to make us aware of that. And so just interesting, though, with Paul Niefer, you know, we had him in the studio talking about this new tax code. And I said, you know, it sounds like this is more complicated. Is it more complicated, or is it just because it's a new tax code, new law into place? And he goes, no, we threw the simplicity out the window a long time ago. And so we will try to provide some clarity. I know you're talking to Paul Niefer in some upcoming shows. We'll have it on Ag Day and U.S. Farm Report. But it is a very complex tax code that will impact all farmers and ranchers. We'll try to provide more clarity in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And for guys like Paul, the changes in the tax reform, it's pretty much job security for guys like Paul, because you better get a professional involved in the decisions that you are making. Because when I talked to Paul last, he was talking about, listen, you need to sit down and put together a plan that's going to – that in 7 to 8 years will allow you to retire in 10. That's the kind of planning that this tax code requires right now.
And not even looking at 10 years out, just this year, there's so much uncertainty and clarity. You know, need more clarity on some of these. He said he spent 50 hours putting together a spreadsheet. 50 hours putting together a spreadsheet to help him. And he knows it's going to change because more rulings are going to come down on this tax. It's just unbelievable.
See,
so anyway.
See, but Tyne, maybe he's just not good with spreadsheets.
Really? Have you talked to that guy? Oh my gosh, it makes my head explode.
I know.
Spreadsheets is like his love language, Chip. Seriously. So weird.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, Ty.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, let's bring in Greg Anderson, editorial director at Drovers. Greg, how you doing, bud?
Good morning, Chip. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's the story on Select Beef? What do you got?
You know, we've talked about Prime increasing here in the last couple of years. And so now there is a new white paper out published by the Red Angus Association of America about the phasing out of select grade beef. And what we mean by that is that choice and prime are increasing so much that select is basically phasing out. And this white paper suggests that select will likely be a niche market by 2025, maybe less than 5% of all the beef produced. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Prime, as we've talked earlier, has grown to the point where it's almost reaching 10% of product now. Choice and prime together are about 82% now. So the reasons is that select is consistently worth less than choice beef. Consumers find it less appealing, and select beef, Chip, costs just as much to produce as choice beef. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So the demand is for good feeder cattle. Feed yards are going, those grid premiums are there, so the feeder cattle prices are going to be higher for, you know, cattle that can marble well, and they can make more money for it. So all good reasons why we're producing more choice and prime, and select is becoming non-existent.
Boy, Greg, I want to talk about this more in the future with you, because I remember back to the 80s when, hey, choice and prime are on their way out. Everybody's going to want select because it's leaner. Because
absolutely.
You know, and at that point, the cattle industry thought they knew what the consumer wanted then, too. And guess what? They were wrong.
Absolutely.
So we need to talk about this more in the future, and we will. Thank you, Greg. That is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We've got John Harris from Farm Journal up next.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
I've got Steve Gome, a corn herbicide product lead for Syngenta, here with me today. Steve, we're wrapping up harvest. Listeners are reflecting back on the season. How can they determine if the herbicide choices they made provided the best value at the end of the season?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chip. Our advice to farmers is what looks like a bargain may not be a bargain when you add up the numbers. The cost per day of residual control is an important factor for corn herbicides. If the cheaper option didn't deliver the same length of residual control or better than high-performing products, then it may not be the best value. Another thing to evaluate for growers is if you have to do multiple cleanup sprays, then you may not have gotten the most value out of the product compared to more effective herbicides. And we've seen this quite a bit over the last few years. Weed escapes can not only rob yield, as you know, but require extra unplanned herbicide applications, which cost time and money. Plus, their seeds will lead to weed issues next season. That's why we recommend Acuron corn herbicide. Farmers who use it tell us you get what you pay for, because it gives them the most effective, most consistent, and longest-lasting residual weed control, and they really truly do see it as an investment. Better weed control, as everybody knows, equals better yield potential, which means more grain in the bin and more profit in your pocket, which is critically important in today's market.
You know, Steve, you used a term or a phrase there that I don't know if I've heard it before, but it's cost per day of residual control. That is, what a way of looking at the cost of the herbicide application.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, when growers are out there and they're harvesting, you know, it's a good idea if they do see weed escapes in the field to get out and look at what types of weeds those are, so that then when they go into their retailer or talk to their agronomist, they can really get a handle on where they are seeing the escapes and what types of investments they need to consider for their herbicide applications the following year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Steve, that is Steve Gome with Syngenta with advice on how to carefully evaluate the herbicide inputs for next season.
Machinery Pete's having a huge year-end unreserved online heater auction in conjunction with Big Iron. Items are open for bidding now and close December 27th. Go to machinerypete.com/auction. Unreserved, lien free, no buyer fee. Start bidding now.
Very cool. Hey, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. We're going to have kind of an open line here in just a little bit. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us with hashtag AgriTalk in the message. We're going to open that up in just a little bit. But right now, let's make time for this industry spotlight. I'm talking with Dr. Jason Bond from Southern Illinois University, and we're talking seed treatments. Dr. Bond, there's lots of options out there when it comes to seed treatments, but what differentiates one from another?
When we think about seed treatments, there's a wide spectrum of things that they target, insect, fungicides, any number of things, but within the class of the compounds that we're talking about today, those that target seedling diseases, they can differ in terms of how much spectrum they have, so how many different types of diseases where they have activity against, maybe how long a product will work. Sometimes products differentiate from how long that protection will last. The target can differ greatly, but a length of control can differ greatly amongst products.
It's important to listen to what your seed rep is telling you, but you also need to do your own research on these protection packages, right?
We think about diseases. Each field, you can have a lot of site-specific things that are going on in that soil, soil fertility, soil type, planting date, a lot of things that are unique to that field that may not occur in the field right next to it. I think it's so good for producers to be able to do some experimentation on their own farms because they are the knowledge center in terms of how things perform on their field. It's important to see at a region or a national level how products might be working, but ultimately that product is going to be used in that farmer's field. Testing needs to be done at that local level.
When you were talking about the residual effectiveness of some of the seed treatments out there, soybeans are being planted earlier every year. These seed treatments are probably allowing that to happen, isn't it?
That's a critical component. Yes, yeah. The plant breeders have done a better job in terms of developing varieties that can come up early and also can withstand some of the harsh conditions, but maybe even a major component of that is the protection that's on that seed now. There were diseases like sudden death syndrome and a lot of Pythium and Phytophthora diseases that in the past, the number one component of how do you manage these is to plant later into warmer soils. The seed treatments have allowed us to get much more aggressive with that early planting date.
Thank you, Dr. Bond. That is Dr. Jason Bond, Southern Illinois University. All right, let's talk about some of the latest things that are happening in the markets and in the industry right now. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us with hashtag AgriTalk in the message. And helping us do this is John Harith. John is the Farm Journal News Director, and he joins us now. Mr. Harith, how
hey,
are you?
Good.
Good. Good, good. You know, just to clue everybody in a little bit on what John does, I mean, he walks around with the phone to his ear all the time.
Pretty much.
And one of the reasons that he is doing that is because he is coordinating the news coverage, who's doing what for AgWeb, for AgriTalk, for Ag Day, for U.S. Farm, for, you know, whatever it is, Farm Journal property that we're talking about. John is kind of right at the hub of that and coordinating our coverage, right?
Yeah, to try to keep people talking to each other to make sure that we're all working in the same direction.
Yeah, yeah. So if you wonder... If you wonder who we might tap from time to time because he knows a lot about what's going on, this is the guy. Get used to hearing his voice. You're going to hear it more as we get into the new year. No doubt about that. Hey, this arrest, the thing that makes it interesting, and I'm trying to check this right now because it's a little bit different than what Tyne reported. Because Tyne, the story that she was working with said that this Sabrina Meng from Huawei Technologies was arrested last night. I think she was arrested December 1.
Yeah, it was December 1, the same day as the dinner in Buenos Aires, Argentina at the G20 summit. Yeah. So a whole lot going on here. This is Meng Wanzhou, who, to tell you the magnitude of this, she is the daughter of the founder of Huawei. So this isn't just an employee. This is very personal for this company. She's the chief financial officer for Huawei, who is the second largest cell phone seller in the world. They've surpassed Apple in selling cell phones. So this is a big deal for them. This is a bit of a continuing point of contention for the U.S. and China. The U.S. earlier has told our U.S. citizens and other countries to not purchase Huawei phones or Huawei infrastructure products because of the risk, security risk of Chinese spying, utilizing technology that has come from that company. So this has really been very contentious between the two. We don't know at this time what is driving these charges because they are under a degree of seal in Canada. But Senator Ben Sasse told the New York Times that it is related to alleged violations of the sanctions placed on Iran. And that follows in line with some reporting done earlier this year by The Wall Street Journal and some others.
Yeah, you think about the tentacles on this thing, on this story right here, John, because it does tie back. I think it does tie back to the sanctions that the U.S. put on Iran, and it. But the timing of it all, John, I'm sorry, it doesn't feel all that coincidental that as President Trump was sitting down to dinner with Chinese President Xi in Argentina, a group of Canadian officers were arresting this
Meng Wanzhou,
thank you, was arresting her as she was making her transfer from one flight to another at a Canadian airport?
At the request of the U.S.
At the request of the U.S. That feels to me like a pretty strong message that from the U.S. to China, that is saying because of her standing as the daughter of the founder, it feels like a strong message that, listen, take us seriously here. We're going to change things.
Well, and that's one of the biggest question marks of this so far is we don't know if this was coordinated with the White House or if this was an ongoing federal investigation that just happened to coincide with that timing. That coincidence seems almost too incredible to believe, yeah. But we don't yet know how involved the White House was in this arrest and in the timing of this arrest. But you throw into the mix, remember back in October, there was another Chinese national, Yang Zhengzhu, who's an officer with China's Ministry of State Security. The U.S. lured him to Belgium on the pretense that they were going to illegally sell him some plane parts, some jet engine parts, to get access to U.S. technology. That was just a ruse to get him to Belgium so he could be extradited to the U.S. To be charged on espionage. Again, this is someone who works for the Chinese government as a spy that the U.S. lured to a third country to bring to the U.S. So this is something that's been escalating for a while.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be something to watch this develop. Hey, before we get to the Bloomberg story that Tyne was talking about, let's talk about what Greg was talking about here real quick, because I got something in my head and I just got to say it, John.
Yeah.
Okay. So Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers, was talking about the phasing out of select beef. Okay. Because it might be less than 5% of the market here by the year 2025. You know, that's all good. That's all fine and good until the consumer changes their damn collective mind again.
Yes.
Well, going back to the select beef.
I don't know if the consumer ever really understood what select was.
Well, right. Exactly. Well, if it's select, well, that must be what I should be buying, you know, because it's been selected for me. It was the wrong name.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that just really concerns me. It really does. The reason that it concerns me so much is because you go back to the 80s when we were going away from the prime for sure, going away even from choice to the select. I mean, remember those racehorse cattle that we had out there?
Oh, yeah. Try to get lean and lean and lean.
Lean is exactly right. So the industry decided that we knew what the consumer wanted, and we bred and bred and bred and bred for it. Well, the industry was wrong, and it started a long-term decline in beef consumption. Okay, what Tyne was talking about here with the Bloomberg story,
yeah,
stepping in and starting to increase their purchases like now immediately. If it's happening, the markets are getting it wrong.
Well, yeah, I think the markets are waiting for signs, you know, they're waiting to see the ships actually leave ports.
Right.
And they're not going to believe it until that happens.
Right. Yeah, I think that's probably accurate right there, John, because they've kind of been fooled on this once, and they're not going to be fooled on it again with the talk about China's coming back in and starting to buy. There were other things that I wanted to get here, John, but we're not going to have time for it. We're going to have to do it again some other time. And like I said, everybody, get used to hearing his voice. He's going to be on the show a lot more going forward. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, that is John Harreth, Farm Journal News Director. Coming up next, we've got Mike Steenhoek from the Soy Transportation Coalition.
New Dallaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you achieve personal best yield.
When you think of Palmer amaranth, water hemp, ragweed, and mare's tail, doesn't it just make you want to give them the pounding they deserve? Now you can with Dyflex Duo Herbicide. It's the post-emergence corn herbicide with two proven sites of action, so you get powerful control of the toughest weeds, built-in resistance management, and excellent crop safety. So don't just hit weeds. Pound them like never before with Dyflex Duo. Learn more at DyflexDuo.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Spray nozzles are some of the smallest and most overlooked pieces of equipment on a sprayer, but they can have the biggest impact on accuracy, efficiency, and drift potential. Worn nozzles can change distribution patterns and cause under or over application, potentially impacting your bottom line. Now's a great time to replace your worn nozzles. Save 10% on John Deere spray nozzles, only available at your local John Deere dealer. Offer ends February 28th, 2019. See your participating dealer for details.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, this bean market, it doesn't believe a lot of talk that China's going to be back in immediately and start buying up some ag products.
No, concerns now that maybe the trade relations will sour. A Chinese executive was arrested, right after the trade truce on Sunday, and that's, given the market concern here this morning. Of note, January beans dropped into Monday's chart gap, but they still left a half cent open. So it's still open by a half cent there, and until that gap is filled, I think that that's at least a minor positive technical posture. If that gap is filled, then watch out, because we may get new selling interest in here. But we're mid-range here, mid-morning, 7 to 8 cents lower, but well off of session lows.
Yeah, what's that doing to corn trade today?
Well, corn's about a penny, two cents lower in most of the contracts. Just kind of hanging there, to be honest with you. We had some daily sales to Mexico this morning. Should be giving us some support, but isn't. And corn's trading mid-range right along with soybeans so far.
Gotcha. A little bit of pressure on the wheat market as well. You get one day up in the hog market. Is that all we can count on?
Well, it looks like it. Moderate to sharp pressure in here this morning. So that up and down, back and forth trade that we've seen here recently is down today. And that's a source of, obviously negative price action there. But cattle market somewhat disappointing as well. Anticipation that we'll see firmer cash prices again. But yet the futures are lackluster this morning.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Windows down, country sound, FM. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. A lot going on in the marketplace right now, and like we talked about with John and we talked about with Brian in Markets Now, there's a lot of uncertainty, and we felt like when we were coming out of the weekend that, hey, maybe we've got some direction. We've got a roadmap. We've got a timeline. Things are starting to progress. We're feeling better about things all of a sudden now. Wow. I don't know if we do have a good understanding of what is going on out there or not. And it's being reflected in the markets. No question. No question about that. Now, one thing that we do know for sure is that we've got a lot of work to do to maintain one of our competitive advantages out there in the world of ag trade, and that is our infrastructure. And we're going to talk now with Mike Steenhook. Mike is with the Soy Transportation Coalition, joins us now. Mike, how are you, man?
Hey, good. Doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I love having you on, Mike. You know that. I mean, because you talk about an issue that we've got to do everything that we can to keep it on a front burner, and it's too easy to get pushed to a back burner, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you only really notice infrastructure when there's a problem, and yep. when there's a pothole or some kind of breakdown somewhere. And so, you know, I think kind of a nice rule of life is it's better to prepare and prevent catastrophes than to react to catastrophes. And so if you can, you know, actually have a little bit of foresight and really get motivated to do some of these things that we need to do on infrastructure, I think we'll all be well served.
Right. One of the things that we need to do on infrastructure is fund some of the projects that could take place out there. How is funding looking for the year ahead?
Well, there is some good news. You know, this, particularly with locks and dams, it can really sound like a broken record. But, you know, the reality is in the year 2013, so just a few years ago, the Congress appropriated $4.72 billion for the Army Corps of Engineers to maintain and improve locks and dams. The current fiscal year appropriations bill has allocated $6.99 billion. So that's a 48% increase in funding. And, you know, I was at the meeting with the Army Corps of Engineers headquarters about a month ago, and the message from them was, yes, we always would like more money, but our focus right now is to make sure that we're good stewards of the robust funding that's been provided to us. And so it's kind of a different shift in what I have long been hearing from the Corps about, hey, we're appreciative of the money we have. We need to make sure that we're worthy of this money. So, again, you'll never hear me say that all the problems have been solved. We have a lot that remains to be done. But we have had some success as of late in agriculture, the barge industry. We all need to be commended. You know, this broad stakeholder group, it's, you know, using a we pronoun is very appropriate. A lot of people have put forth a lot of effort to make sure that this happens.
Very cool. Hey, is the Corps still in charge of deciding how that money is spent?
Yeah, I mean, there's it used to be more congressionally directed when we lived in the earmark period.
Right.
But now there's the Congress has some input into the process, but it's much more determined by the Army Corps of Engineers and what the priority projects are. And that's more determined in what's called a Water Resources Development Act. It's kind of right. establishing that priority list. So, you know, Congress still has input into it, but it's more determined by the Corps of Engineers. And you know, if we have that funding, you know, the Corps, their list of projects that they want to execute would be very helpful for agriculture, some of the locks and dams, and then, of course, dredging the lower Mississippi River where so many of our exports leave from. So, you know, we're happy with the to-do list. We just need to make sure that the funding is there to actually execute it.
Yeah, Mike, talk about that dredging on the lower Mississippi, because, you know, when we talk about moving product up and down the inland waterways, when we think about issues, so often we think about those 80-year-old lock and dam systems up and down the river. But when we talk about increasing the efficiency of the whole shipping program, dredging that lower miss is really up the priority list.
It very much is. You know, there's this 256-mile stretch of the lower Mississippi River that starts at Baton Rouge, Louisiana. New Orleans is about mile 100, and the Gulf of Mexico is essentially at mile zero. That area accounts for 60% of U.S. soybean exports, 59% of corn exports. So by far the number one launching point onto the international marketplace for both commodities. And so having that channel dredged an additional 5 feet from its currently authorized 45 feet to an additional 50 feet, you can attract larger ships. You can take the current ships and load them heavier. That just shaves cents off the per bushel delivered price to our customers and makes it more competitive. And so it's something that would be of significant importance to our industry. If Congress, if the administration wants to provide a shot of adrenaline into the soybean industry and agriculture in general, doing projects like this would be a great way to start.
Yeah, you know, and I alluded to it at the start of this segment here when I said something about it's so important to the future of our industry, and it is a competitive advantage for the U.S. We're just talking about maintaining the advantage that we've got, and with some of the investment that Brazil is making, we are at risk of losing that competitive advantage through infrastructure.
Certainly, you know, they're making investments in their infrastructure. Yeah. We remain pretty lackadaisical in investing in ours. And, you know, you look at the inland waterway system, you know, you've got the most productive farm ground on the planet, and then it's penetrated by a navigable system of waterways with the Illinois River, the Ohio River, the Mississippi River, the Arkansas River. And so the table is set for us to be able to efficiently deliver large volumes of agricultural products far distances. And so all we need to do is just, you know, we recognize it. We just need to make sure we take care of it. And in doing so, we'll make sure that we're well positioned for the future to not only maintain these current markets we have, but also to capitalize on future markets.
Right. Right. At the Soy Transportation Coalition, you're not just looking at inland waterway and barge traffic. You're also looking at rail, right?
You know, rail is certainly an important part of it as well. You know, and we even extend to rural roads and bridges. You know, there's a project with the Federal Highway Administration in which they're providing grants to states to replace rural bridges. And that's something that we're really engaged in as well, to try to see as much of that money go to soybean producing areas of the country. There's a lot of rural bridges that need to be replaced. And that's the mode of transportation that's most relatable to farmers. Yep. If you don't have that system of rural roads and bridges, it frankly doesn't matter the condition of our locks and dams or the condition of our ports. It is that first link in the logistics chain, and we need to make sure that there's attention devoted to that as well.
Yeah, we need to have something better than BR-163 out there across the country, don't we?
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, agriculture is a 21st century industry using an early 20th century rural infrastructure in many respects. Yeah. And some of these roads and bridges would, you know, my father, who grew up on a farm in central Iowa in the 1950s, would recognize them. Yeah. And so we need to make sure that we're maintaining those as well and improving and making sure it's keeping pace with all of the other innovations that are occurring in agriculture.
Right, right. Hey, Mike, the reason that I asked about if you follow the rail situation is, how is the rail doing serving ag in here in the Midwest? Are they keeping up with the demands?
You know, the good news is that it's a very well capitalized industry. They invest vigorously into their network, so it's a well positioned network with lots of investment. You know, one of the challenges and one of the things that continues to frustrate ag shippers is that rates continue to go up. You know, even if demand is depressed, usually when demand for something goes down, the company will reduce prices in order to re-stimulate demand. Yeah. And that happens in the barge industry. It doesn't happen so much in the rail industry. You see kind of a nice, you know, upward trajectory on rail rates from 1 year to the next. And so that's one of the things that, you know, I continue to hear frustrations from ag shippers is, you know, rates can just be really cost prohibitive. And so, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we try to work to stimulate alternative modes of transportation, competition across modes of transportation, rail versus barge, truck versus rail, truck versus barge. When you have that kind of arrangement, it really positions shippers well to get products to customers efficiently.
Yes, absolutely. Mike, what are you working on at Soy Transportation Coalition that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're also exploring is, you know, the prospect for an increasing amount of soybean exports to be shipped via container, including possibly on the inland waterway system. There's a new concept that a new vessel design that is designed to transport containers on the inland waterway system. and agriculture could be a potential beneficiary of that. Containerized shipping will never rival the bulk mode of transportation, right. But we're trying to diversify, particularly with this issue with China, we're trying to diversify our customers throughout the world. And some of those customers, they don't want to have big shipments of product like China receives. They want smaller shipments. They want greater quality preservation, less contamination. They want to have a more localized supply chain, and containerized shipping can help accomplish that. So that's something that we're going to continue to explore, and just to see if that slice of the pie chart for containerized shipping can get a little bit bigger.
That is fascinating to me. Mike, thank you so much for the update on what's going on, bud. Let's stay in touch. And you know, if you've got an effort that you need to get out in front of farmers in America, give me a call.
Hey, always looking forward to it. Thanks, Chip.
All right, that is Mike Steenhoek with the Soy Transportation Coalition. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up with Jonathan Clausen from Iowa State University.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal Business Editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready 2 Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Sure Start 2, Culex, Durango DMA, Classic.
More than 100 crop protection products.
Enserve, Ever Pre-X.
That's what's available to you through the all-new True Choice offer from Corteva Agriscience, the agriculture division of Dow DuPont.
Approach Prima, Sonic.
It's an offer simpler than saying all these names in 60 seconds.
Trivance, Realm Q.
Just buy Pioneer brand seed and Corteva cash is immediately put into your True Choice account at your crop protection retailer. No waiting, no rebate. Then you can put that Corteva cash towards more than 100 crop protection herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, and stabilizers. And as you can hear, there are a lot of options for you.
Open Sky, Elevore.
With True Choice, the only hard part is figuring out which of these products you want.
Perfect match. Resicor, Instinct.
Ask your local Pioneer sales representative or your crop protection retailer about True Choice. New, simple, now.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
The mighty Prosoro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosoro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosoro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
You could win a Ford F-150 Raptor in the Ag Explorer Truck Sweepstakes. Enter at trucksweeps.com.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip Flory. Okay, we're going to talk about something that's just a little bit different. We haven't done a lot of this on AgriTalk, and I'm looking forward to learning about a project that is being headed up by Jonathan Clausen. Jonathan is at Iowa State University. He's an assistant professor in mechanical engineering there at ISU. He's the leader of this project. First, Jonathan, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Okay. Bury and forget soil sensors. Soil sensors. Now, when we talk about this project, Jonathan, what exactly is it? What are we trying to monitor?
Yeah, so in our case, we're trying to monitor nitrogen, basically ammonium and nitrate ions that are in the soil. So we're trying to figure out, you know, what happens often is that we're using too much of these nutrients, and they run off into our or leach into our waterways and cause pollution hazards. So we're trying to get a better feel for how much nitrogen we need to apply to a field to have good crop yields, but then also hopefully not applying too much so that we don't have this nitrogen runoff problem.
Right. But Jonathan, isn't this something that we look at least on an annual basis through soil tests, right?
Yeah, we do. So what we're trying to do is to really pinpoint throughout the growing season. So have these sensors in the soil and monitoring, almost constantly throughout a growing season, a farm field, and take into account variations that might be in that farm field so that fertilizer could potentially be applied, you know, with varying amounts in that same field, but then throughout the growing season as well.
Yeah, we know that those nutrients and the nitrates get away from us. But what you're talking about here, Jonathan, is let's identify the time of the year, the specific conditions in which a field might be most vulnerable to losing those nutrients.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And especially after a heavy rain event, maybe in the early spring, a farmer might be worried that maybe a lot of the fertilizer is no longer there in the field. They might need to apply more. This way, we'd actually know, hey, there actually is sufficient, or you do need to apply more. So we could help the farmer in both of those aspects.
Right. And you know, Jonathan, what you said about kind of pinpointing exactly how much nitrogen is needed for a corn crop and how much needs to be applied to get those yield goals met and everything, a sensor like this, couldn't it help them discover in a year like 2018 in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, we had the idea that that corn crop was out of gas, was out of nitrogen late in the season. This would tell you if you are out of gas or not.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, cool. So then you would know throughout the growing season if you needed to apply more fertilizer or not. Yep.
Gotcha. Now, I got a feeling, though, Jonathan, that this whole effort here didn't start with the idea of let's help them pinpoint exactly how much nitrogen. It's got to have something to do with the nitrogen runoff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I think the environmental impacts, you know, we know about algae blooms, both here in freshwater yep. streams and lakes and all the way into our oceans and in seawater. But also, we want to make it a win-win situation. It's not just, sure. You know, a big part of it is environmental impact, but also the fact that we could help the farmer potentially save costs on their fertilizer inputs as well.
Okay. So what is the status of the project? Is it still in testing to figure out if these sensors really work?
We have created the sensors themselves. Okay. We're trying to right now hook them up to the right electronics to different soil probes that will go into the soil. We're looking at different ways to wirelessly transmit the data from the soil to a central server so that we could really lay down a whole network of sensors throughout the farm field and still make them, you know, very low cost so that we could have, you know, a farm field blanketed with the sensors.
Wow. Wow. Low cost sensors. I mean, you think just back just 10 years ago, Jonathan, somebody saying low cost sensors that can give you that kind of information that you're talking about, it would have been laughed at. But now, can't we like print some of these sensors and so on?
Yeah, exactly. So in our case, Yeah. So we can print these sensors just on a piece of paper, so to speak, or flexible polymer that can be stuck into the soil. Wow. And we're making them all out of carbon, so they're all graphene-based. So they potentially, the sensors themselves could be just kind of tilled into the ground or left into the ground to decompose while we would take up the electronics each season. So that's kind of why they're low cost, because we can just make them out of these low cost materials.
Unbelievable. Who are you working with on this project, Jonathan?
So yeah, we have some collaborators at the University of Florida, actually, who William Eisenstadt, he's the lead PI there, and he's working with the wireless communications and the electronics part of it, while my lab is working on making those graphene based biosensors.
Right. So what's the ultimate goal here?
Yeah, so for this project, it is to try to make this kind of wireless sensor network. But we also have another collaborator at Florida, Melanie Carl, and she's working with a nitrogen model. So we're trying to figure out, you know, can we get higher resolution data points, so to speak, in some of these models? And we're going to put these into a model tomato plant facility where we'll look at these sensors at different depths and at different soil conditions and different water conditions just to figure out, you know, how does nitrogen and specifically nitrate permeate through the soil at these different soil conditions. And just having an updated model might help a farmer know, okay, if they have this soil type, they would expect, you know, X amount of nitrate to leach through, or maybe they need to apply more or less nitrogen based upon their soil type and weather conditions.
Yeah,
so that,
very cool.
That one of those endpoints is that model, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Jonathan, keep us up to speed on how this is, how this progresses, okay? It's going to be interesting to track the success here.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
All right. That is Jonathan Clausen, ISU Assistant Professor of Mechanical Engineering. Hey, thanks for joining us today. I got to hit the road. Bubba is going to be in this afternoon. Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. And tomorrow morning, Clinton Griffiths will be sitting in for me on the free-for-all here on AgriTalk.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
Here's one from a corn grower in Iowa. As I plan for next season, what product would you recommend to increase yield next year?
Every crop stands to benefit from better nutrient management, especially phosphorus and sulfur. For example, Micro Essentials is a fertilizer source that contains phosphorus sulfur, and we know it works because it helps provide provide uniform nutrient distribution, increased nutrient uptake, and season-long availability.
We have up to 12 years of data that suggests that yield of 7.2 with MicroEssential SZ compared to traditional fertilizer sources, and the yield speaks for itself.
Fertility is the foundation for high yields, and this is the new frontier of dry fertilizer.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit microessentials.com.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about upgrading your weed control with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.